I'm Abby.
And I'm Allie.
And it's
About Time for True Crime.
Hi.
Welcome back.
Welcome back to your favorite true crime podcast.
Oh, you guys.
How the hell are you? How's your day? How was your, I don't know, week after Valentine's Day?
Yeah.
Mine was great. It was my birthday.
I know.
Sure was. And now, by the time you're hearing this, I'm actually headed to a wedding.
You are.
Right now. That's crazy.
I know.
But super excited. This is like my oldest friend in the world. So we met at like 6 months old, max. And I'm really excited.
I know. And her dress is so pretty and she's so pretty.
She's so beautiful.
It's going to be so awesome. To have so much fun.
I will. And then my maid of honor era comes to a close.
For now.
Sure.
Sure, Jan.
Sure, Jan. I was expecting two asks, and I got those two asks.
Yeah, but everybody wants you to be their maid of honor.
Everybody wants to be us, Andrea.
Everyone wants to live like this.
Everybody wants to live like this. Everybody wants to have a nonstop maid of honor era. I'm excited for it to come to a close. It's a very special role.
It is.
It's not something I take lightly, and it's something that I don't think I'd be able to say yes to if I didn't like fully love both people getting married, you know?
I still follow a lot of the wedding related things on Reddit just because I got married, and then I've left them just because, like,
why not?
It was a part of my life for so long.
Yeah.
But there are so many people, and it's so sad that they're like, they essentially pay to rent bridesmaids.
What?
Yeah.
Huh?
Like, to pad the numbers.
Huh?
Yep. It's a thing.
Well.
Yep.
Okay. I mean, hey, if you want that many bridesmaids and that's the way to do it, I guess that's your prerogative. It's not.
I have thoughts.
It's not mine specifically, no. But hey.
No, ma'am.
To each their own. I'm like, I'm gearing up to do like the world's smallest wedding.
As you should.
I don't need that to be a giant thing. Nope. You know? I also, lately, I've been really liking the idea of like a hard launch of a relationship at the wedding. Like, no posts of anybody at all until I get married.
Nobody knows.
Yeah.
And they're like, well, now that I've got you here.
Yeah. Hey, so happy birthday to me. This is actually my wedding.
Yes. Thank you for joining.
No, and not like the people in my life wouldn't know. Like, the people that are close to me would know. But like, I wouldn't post anything. Nothing would be on social media. I just would want to do like hard launch. This is my spouse. I also think it would be really funny to do a hard launch of a child at 18. Like, not post any baby photos, not post any family pictures.
Nothing growing up.
Just like, it seems like yesterday you were my baby and now you're graduating high school. sorry, apparently I just really like a long con bit, so
goodness.
Don't worry, no surprises coming for you guys anytime soon. You guys are all on the inner circle, you're part of the fam.
Yeah, so. No, we're all at the table here.
Yeah. Speaking of, so are some tagalongs.
Yep.
And dare I say, this is the era to support your local Girl Scout cookie dealer, please. I beg you. Freeze your Thin Mints if you do nothing else.
It's what the people want.
It's what the people need. Really. It's what they deserve.
We have gotten so many messages about this case.
Yes.
This is quite the ride.
Such a ride.
I'm so excited for this episode because there are so many cases where the trial is just uneventful.
Oh yeah, that's not this.
No, but like, everything you've already spent the episode or episodes talking about, you've already covered. And so it was like, okay, they went over this and then this is the verdict.
Right.
And it's kind of easy and preferable to kind of skip over a lot of the trial because a lot of it would be redundant.
Yeah.
This is anything but. This is like, the trial is what people were seated for.
Yes. Yeah. So I'm really excited to finish up this series. This is the Jodi Arias series that we're wrapping up. Hopefully you know that by now because we're on part 3.
I know, and you clicked it. Come on, guys.
So, okay, queen. I would suggest, obviously, if you haven't, go back, listen to both of the first two parts, because there's so much to this that, like, I'll do a little recap, but you're not going to get nearly as much as you would if you hear all of it.
Mm.
So we'll do that. And then today we're going to talk about a bunch of it. So do you want to hop into it?
I think we should, because I'm just eager.
All right. Well, in that case, yoo-hoo, pot's on.
Oh.
Hi. Can you lock in? Can you get here? Keep yourself inside the pod at all times, please.
Click it or ticket.
Yeah. Click it or ticket, motherfucker. All right. today we are hopping into the last part of our series on Jodi Arias. So hello. Hi. Howdy. Welcome or welcome back to your favorite true crime podcast, About Time for True Crime. I'm so excited to bring to you the trial and aftermath and all of that for Jodi Arias. But as always, I just wanted to give some quick sources and trigger warnings. For trigger warnings today, we are still talking about some of those gory details of murder. We're talking about liar, liar, pants on fires. We're talking about inner partner violence, potential abuse. And if it's a trigger for you the way it is for me, we're also talking about a lot of dumb fuckery. So just tread lightly if that's going to be rough. It will be. In terms of sources, babe, I hope you already know by now that they are all linked down below in that little Google Doc that's linked under the word sources, so you can see absolutely everything I used for this. But I also will give a special shout out today to Last Podcast on the Left's coverage of this case, as well as Jodi Arias in Defense of, the documentary about Jodi's attorney, and the documentary Jodi Arias Cellmate Secrets. But let's hop right on into it, because I know you're waiting for this.
Yeah.
So for those of you who want a little summary of the last two episodes, we met Jodi Arias and Travis Alexander in part one. Travis, a successful salesman and motivational speaker at Prepaid Legal Services in Mesa, Arizona, met a woman named Jodi Arias at a conference. Jodi and Travis hit it off right off the bat, and the two started talking and really started to get to know each other. Not only did they find out they had a lot in common personality-wise, the two also found out they had very compatible kinks, so to speak.
Hmm.
They started a sexy little long-distance secret relationship, sexting, phone sexing, and meeting up for hot little hookups in the middle of Yreka, California, where Jodi was from, and Mesa, Arizona, where Travis lived. The only issue was Travis's deep Mormon faith. The Mormon faith teaches chastity and abstinence from sex until marriage, and Travis and Jodi were not doing that. and so this became sort of a quick point of contention, and Jodi quickly converted to Mormonism, and then the two had a relationship for a few months. And I do mean a few months. It was like 4 to 5 months max.
Yes.
But at the end of it, Travis was still texting some other woman and Jodi wasn't ready for it to end, but she said it's over.
Mm.
That being said, even after the breakup, she moved to Mesa to be closer to him.
Mm.
And then it seemed like that wasn't getting them back together and she couldn't afford it anymore. And she went home to Yreka, California. But the two still couldn't resist getting it on, even though they were broken up. So even though they weren't dating anymore, there were still a lot of hot phone calls and texts and like little meetups to see what they could accomplish in their time together. But in June of 2008, Travis was found dead in his shower, horrifically brutalized. Last episode, we reviewed Jodi's questioning and the initial investigation. There was a horrendous amount of blood, but the investigators found brown hairs, obviously blood, a .25 caliber bullet that seemed potentially connected to a robbery at Jodi's house that happened just a few weeks earlier, and that Jodi was driving around the time of Travis's death. Jodi had been arrested for Travis's murder, but she refused to give any information up, constantly repeating that she wasn't there and that she would never hurt Travis. And we also reviewed mental health as an element of this case, sort of leaving off at like, there's a lot of elements we might not know, and there's a lot of ways this could be better explained if there were other diagnoses available. But at present, borderline personality disorder seems to be like the best description of what Jody has going on. And we'll see more of that today. But at the end of last week, we left Jody saying, okay, whoopsies, I lied. Whoops.
No.
She said, I didn't hurt Travis, but I know who did. And that's where we're going to pick up today. So Jody says she does know what happened. And she was lying, okay? She didn't really not see him. She saw him, but she was scared. She was so scared. She did see Travis, okay? He asked her to come by, and she didn't want to initially. She said, no, Travis, no. And he said, please. And she said, okay.
I can never say no to you. I'll be there in 5.
Literally.
I was up the hours. Street.
So
I was up the road.
She was like, I was waiting for this call. No. So she says she gets there. She got there like early in the morning, like 1 or 2 a.m. The two sleep until like mid-afternoon. And then they got up and did their sexy little thing, including all of the photos that we saw, which did include the leather Cheeto, if you remembered that from last week. But once we got to them having their nice little afternoon, and then Travis is in the shower and the shower pics start showing up on the camera, Jody says something terrifying happened. See, while she was taking these photos, two masked individuals, a man and a woman, entered the home and shot Travis. She didn't even know what happened. But a struggle ensued, and something happened when she started fighting with them. So it sounded like, and I don't have the exact timeline right because she has changed it a wee bit from telling to telling, but something along the lines of the following is what she said occurred. There was a man and a woman. They came in. They shot Travis first. She didn't know what happened. And then they sort of split up and started fighting with them both. I believe the woman had a knife, but she might have also had a gun. That was confusing and a point that was changed often. And Travis was being further brutalized. And at some point, Jody was, I believe, fighting with the woman and was able to escape. And in a moment of pure heroism, she ran right over to Travis and said, Travis, come on, we gotta go. Travis, come on. And he said, no, I can't go. I can't feel my legs. You have to go on without me. And she said, but Travis, come on. And he wouldn't. And so she started to leave. And then the woman, or the man, very confusing, tried to get her and kill her. And the other one stopped them and said, that's not what we're here for. And then went on to further brutalize Travis. And then at some point, the man got her wallet and saw her registration and said, you're that blonde bitch, or something like that. And then essentially told her that if she told anyone, he'd kill her family, find them, and that she would also be dead. And then she was allowed to leave.
Do you think when she was speaking that she tasted the bullshit as it came out?
The thing is...
Or was it more of just an aftertaste kind of thing? Because that is so ridiculous. It's just ridiculous. It's almost funny.
It's almost funny. The funnier part to me is that with all of this, she then still drove off, did not call 911, did not say anything to anyone, but found her new beau in Salt Lake City where she was headed anyway. And then they still fucked that next day.
And of course, she's painting herself as the hero.
Right.
That she narrowly escaped with her life, but she tried to bring him with her. And he said, no, no, you go on without me. I can't.
Yeah.
And then just before she is dead, somebody else says, no, she's not the one we're here for.
That's not why we're here.
And then she's just like, this is my opportunity. And she gets out and she's like, ah, look what I did. Let's
she
fuck.
She just can't fucking resist it.
And then she goes to this other, like, come
and I
on.
Think truly I would say that she would be able to taste the bullshit as it was on its way out. But the problem is, I think so much of what she says is bullshit, it doesn't register as a new taste. It's like how you get home and like everybody's house smells different, but like your house doesn't smell like anything to you.
Yep.
I think it's that.
Yeah, it's her baseline.
Yeah, she has no threshold for bullshit.
Absolutely. Ridiculous and kind of insulting to assume that anybody would believe that.
Incredibly. And all of the details that change. And here's the thing. This is the story she stuck with. She told this story for 2 fucking years waiting trial.
Her attorneys were probably like, you should not have done that. You should not have done that.
Things you shouldn't have said. That. 100% that. And now, I would say that, like, this is the story she stuck with for 2 years waiting trial because that's the story she told. And then it took 2 years to get trial. Except that she has no fucking problem talking her mouth off. She loves to yap. And, like, as a fellow yapper, girl, shut up. Like,
she's got a yappetite.
She does. Insatiable. And she holds her own press conferences. She invites people to the jail or prison to, like, see her and talk to her and record things and put it out for her. And this, I think, is where a lot of people get that whole, like, oh, she's a narcissist thing. Mm. I think she just fucking loves the attention. Yeah. I don't think it's about her. I think it's about her getting attention. Mm. And then she does, in one of those conferences, say something along the lines of, and I think this might be a direct quote, no jury will find me guilty, and you can mark my words on that. So that aged like milk.
Great.
Yeah. But let's get to this trial, because this is really what we're here for. And this is really the majority of what we're going to be talking about today. This trial had a huge amount of coverage. This was insane. It was incredibly long and explicit and fascinating. Not only was there technology to show everything, but culturally, America was starting to dive back into true crime. And this case had it all. Hot people, sexually explicit elements, religion, and one of the most brutal murders ever shared. Truly. I wish this was a case where I could skip through the court. I really fucking do. But that is not this case.
Mm-mm.
No. The trial to convict Jodi Arias was long, grueling, and so fucking scandalous. So scandalous. First, there are two players to know here. The prosecutor is Juan Martinez, and he's a smaller guy. He's, like, fired up, and he really wants Jodi to pay for what she did. And I think that he gets kind of a lot of smack for the way that he went about some of this. None of it was ever found to be illegal or unconstitutional, mm-hmm. but he was very aggressive with her, just verbally, of like, and you did this, and you did that. And I think it was important to sort of catch her off guard, but it was really uncomfortable for people watching. To say, like, but that's just a girl.
Well, and that's because that's how we treat women.
Uh-huh.
Right?
Oh, so this case has so many elements of, like, the dichotomy of having a woman on stand for something like this. Just this oscillating public perception of her of, like, but that's just a girl. To, like, what a heartless bitch. To, like, but that's just a girl. To what a heartless bitch.
Right. And then it's like, look how small she is. She could never do that. And then, like, oh, look, she's a whore.
Yep.
And then that's kind of what they try to drive home. And they take these very intimate moments and they're like, look, see, she's not even likable.
Yeah.
In this very religious environment, community.
Yep.
You know?
And it's just a lot. So it's like a lot of weird sort of bias and perception of women in crime, and also the religious elements of this, and sort of like whether or not you are someone who respects religion. And if you are, then it's like an extra disrespect for the way that she treated Travis and the things that they were doing. And if you don't, then this element of disrespect of like, oh, you're doing that. And then like all of these extra layers on top of it. So I'm not sure how much of that was playing into Juan Martinez's, I guess, intensity on this case, or if it was something else going on, or maybe he just fucking related to Travis and was like, hey, that's a decent guy who was doing what he could. And now this woman is not only murdering him, trying to take credit for something that very clearly didn't happen, calling herself a hero. And as we're going to find out, totally fucking desecrates Travis's name in the middle of this trial.
And that's
very publicly.
That's the worst part for me, is that the victim should be the focal point, in that this life was lost, and not let's make him the least sympathetic victim you can to try to buy sympathy for the offender.
Right. And it's wrong, and we're going to get to more of that. But I do also just want to note, before we get all the way into this, while what he did wasn't necessarily great in this case, it was effective and it was legal.
I mean, it's not uncommon for prosecutors to be very theatrical and intense in doing so. I mean, I would say you might normally see that from defense.
Agreed. But the reason I want to highlight this is because as of 2020, Arizona had disbarred him, which he consented to. And actually, Arizona's Supreme Court reprimanded him for his behavior in many trials, including Jody's. But his behavior in Jody's that they reprimanded was, I believe, an interpersonal relationship with a reporter. It didn't really have anything to do with his, like, his take and him doing his job in this case.
No, he didn't do anything illegal or introduce right. evidence or hold it or do anything like that. It was that he had a girlfriend that was a reporter.
Right. So I just want to make that known. Like, he is disbarred. He has been known to have not great practices, but it doesn't seem like those really came out here other than a reporter. And I think that's fine. There were a shitload of reporters. That was not the only one.
You also know that if there were even an inch that Jody's attorneys, like her legal team, could grab onto to get this case thrown out, they would have.
Oh, yeah.
So there really must not have been. Yeah, there must really not have been something they could point to, because you know they would have done that.
Yeah. The other player to know here is Kirk Newmy, the defense attorney for Jody. Kirk Newmy became very quickly criticized and ostracized by the public for taking this case on and defending Jody. And I will say the documentary Jody Arias in Defense Of was incredibly helpful in understanding more about Kirk Newmy. Am I the biggest fan? Not personally. But I don't have to be for him to do his job okay and to understand more about this. Essentially, he was saying that he was working as a defense attorney on solely capital cases where death penalty was on the table. And for him, and I think this was really interesting to have explained in sort of layman's terms and in this documentary, was that in that case, his whole job is just to get her off of the death penalty. It's not to prove that she's innocent. Like, at the point where you're getting a capital case, like, it's pretty obvious that there was some heavy involvement in something like first degree murder.
It's to spare her life, not get her off.
Right. So for him, it was either we got to get this down to a second degree or manslaughter charge instead of first degree murder, or it's to get her off of the death penalty if she's found guilty.
Right.
And he did not like Jody. He did not like Jody at all. He actually said in this documentary, like, the first time they talked, it was more like talking to someone in the middle of a Starbucks than it was talking to someone who was on trial for murder.
That is such an accurate yep. depiction.
Yeah. He said it was the first time I met her that I realized how difficult this would be. And he actually tried to get off of this case. He was like, I don't want it. Like, I want to go do something else. Yeah. But he essentially was kind of like court ordered to do this almost. Mm-hmm. There is the Sixth Amendment right in the Constitution that has some sort of legal standing that says the defendant has a right to sort of have input and talk about how they want their defense to go, but also that they have a right to these attorneys. And Kirk was like, I want to switch jobs anyway. Like, I don't want to do this. And the court is like, no, if she wants this and you have no other reason to be off of it, you're not able to get off of it. And then he was like, okay, well, that's if she wants it. So maybe I'll see if she doesn't. And then she essentially threatened to, like, absolutely wreck his reputation so he wouldn't get any clients after this if he didn't defend her.
Great.
So he was like, cool, 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 cool. Guess I'm in this.
Teamwork.
And again, like I said, am I his biggest fan? No, but I don't have to be. The reason that I initially got rubbed the wrong way by him was he was like, yeah, I had to miss like a lot of weekends in Vegas to do this case. And I was like, boo-hoo, a man died. But like, that doesn't mean he's an ineffective counsel or that he didn't want to do this. Like, he didn't want to do this. So
I also think in true crime podcast, just to note here, because I hear this a lot and I disagree with it, is that a lot of people just want to rag on defense counsel so severely because it's like, well, obviously they're guilty and how could you defend them?
It's a constitutional right.
But it's a constitutional right, but it is also your job. And every defendant is deserving of an effective defense.
Yep.
The onus is on the state to prove beyond a reasonable doubt. Defense pokes holes in that reasonable doubt and it's up to the jury to determine where to go from there.
Yeah.
And I think that a lot of people get really personal about it. And frankly, if I were to be an attorney, I would be a prosecutor all day long because mm-hmm. I need to sleep at night. And that is what I would want to do. It's not where the money is. It's not anything. And that's just where I think my views more align, that I would rather be sort of on the side of that versus like defending, because I would struggle to defend somebody like right. Jodi Arias or Casey Anthony is a great example. If you want to talk about a really messed up defendant and defense counsel relationship, Jose Baez, like that is a, just her court case could be a episode in and of itself.
Yeah.
Regardless of all the evidence, just that dynamic. So I think that like, I get frustrated because I think it's a very juvenile way to look at something so serious, because if you or I were on trial for something, we would want defense counsel. And I don't want the defense counsel that thinks I'm guilty and wants me to rot for it. Like, that is not what people are deserving of, regardless. And the system isn't perfect, but it's as close as we can get. And you are deserving of having that. You don't have to prove your innocence.
Well, and I think the other thing that people often forget is that it is a job, much like you. Like, I mean, I struggle with it. I could never be a criminal attorney. I would struggle on both sides of that so heavily. But where we differ is if I had to pick one, I'd be a defense attorney. Yeah. Because if I'm sleeping at night, it's because I'm giving someone a right versus like taking the risk of, is that person guilty or not? And am I throwing their life away for that? But the other hand of it is this person guilty or not? And am I saving them from punishment they deserve for that? So like, it's a struggle. And I think Kirk Noumi was definitely on that struggle bus. And he was like, I don't want to do this. But he really felt backed into a corner. And I really don't think he necessarily had a choice.
He did give her a shot, though. I mean, yeah. He worked his ass off. It wasn't like he threw in the towel because he didn't feel like it. And I think part of that is like doing the right thing.
Oh, yeah.
But
and being good at your job.
But let's be honest. I might have a cynical view of people a lot of times, but the greater good is very rarely a motivator for people. It's how is this going to impact him personally?
Right.
This was a global case. And if you were around or paying attention at this time, every tabloid, you couldn't go to the supermarket without seeing every single magazine had Jodi Arias on it. Like, you couldn't put on the news. This was so sensational that for his own career, this could have been detrimental to him if he did a bad job anyway.
Right. Right. And exactly that. I think in that documentary, it was very curious because obviously in hindsight, we know how big this got. Mm-hmm. But he was like, yeah, as a defense attorney, specifically on capital cases,
I do this all the time.
Any other fucking case. And like, did I know it was going to be tough when I met her? Sure. But I didn't know it was going to be this. Mm-hmm. And with Twitter being active and social media on top of the news coverage, on top of it being pretty constant coverage, he got bullied like none other. Like, he got harassed. People were calling him like a fat fuck all over the internet. And like, I can't imagine that really messes with you when you're like, I don't even want to be doing this fucking case.
Yeah.
And I have to do it well enough that my job's okay and that my reputation's okay. And by doing that, it's making my reputation worse in other ways. And I don't know what the fuck to do with this.
Well, and that's just it. And that's why I wanted to point out like the hate that happens. Like,
oh, yeah.
Sometimes I have issues with particular approaches to cases or things. And that's why I'm being very like I about this. Like, these are my views. I'm not speaking for Abby. I'm not speaking for the world. But while I don't think I could be a criminal defense attorney, I absolutely respect their role and they are absolutely necessary. And I think not a lot of people are seeing that until you need one.
Right.
But I mean, he was lit up just as much as she was.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, she was torn apart, but you expect that. You expect the defendant in a case like this to be looked at under a microscope. But for defense counsel, just seems... Well, almost petty.
Oh my God, it was so petty. And I felt so bad because the other part of this, and I giggle a little because visually it's a little jarring, but like Juan Martinez is this very small, short, fired up man.
The prosecutor. Right.
And then you have Kirk Noumi, who's the defense attorney. And he is like, he's very good at his job, but he is not as fired up. He's much bigger in that like he is very tall and in stature he's bigger. And so it's like these two polar opposites going at this, and everybody has something to say about it. They're like, haha, angry little short man, or like, haha, mm-hmm. stupid big man. And it's like, okay, all right, neither of them had anything to do with the fact that a man was brutally murdered.
Mm-hmm.
So that being said, those are some of the dynamics to pay attention to in terms of like the coverage that you'll see in this case. But I do want to get into the actual trial.
Yeah.
And I'm not going to do the trial chronologically because I think that is not going to be helpful for understanding both sides of this. Because like when I was doing all of my research, I did it chronologically and I was so fucking pissed off by the time that Jodi Arias even took the stand. I didn't want to listen to what she had to say. So I'm going to start with her argument and then I'm going to go to prosecution, which typically it's like prosecution, then defense, then prosecution, then defense.
Mm-hmm.
But just so we know.
So we're going on, she's on the stand.
Yeah, I'm doing this a little out of order, but this trial starts in January of 2013. January 2nd, to be exact.
Mm-hmm. Everyone had New Year's off, and then a great way to start the year.
They all come back a little those less photos. Hungover, and then they're like, okay.
Oh, that's a giant leather Cheeto in front of me.
That is a glistening chrysanthemum, to say the least, you know? But this trial wasn't fucking done until May of 2013. There were 67 days, active days of trial.
That's so long.
That's so long. And this trial was like not only long in time, but also content. There was a shitload covered. Jodi came to court an entirely different woman than the woman they interrogated. So the other thing that's important to look at here is Jodi's appearance.
Yes.
God knows she does, you know. Uh-huh. But Jodi walks into the court an entirely different woman. While she had been plastered all over the news and the case and the coverage in many of her iterations, Jodi is shown in photos with Travis in her blonde era.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she's tan, she's blonde, she's kind of this like bombshell Mormon woman. That's what she's displaying herself as. And then she gets arrested and she dyes her hair brown right before that. But then she walks into court and she has a new era yet again, which is bangs with a hint of schoolgirl extravaganza.
It's you know? True.
Now, as a girl with a new bangs era, I can't say this was entirely related to the court visual, but I do believe it was heavily related to the court visual.
Yes.
I'm going to try to give a relatively condensed version of the cases that were presented, but keep in mind through all of this, Jodi makes a lot of crying sounds and sort of almost bows her head while she does this, but with the bangs and the dark hair, it's all very curtained around her face. You can't see a lot. And also she likes to do these little like half up ponytails off to the side. Kind of like the female lead in Napoleon Dynamite,
mm-hmm.
if you know what I'm talking mm-hmm. about, where it's like, it's not the full side ponytail, but if that was like a half up, half down with a wispy bang,
yep,
that's Jodi Arias.
It's very playful, very young.
Youthful, yeah.
And I think that that was really all that she had because the contrast that they were going to play in court of like the sex and the photos and all of this raunchy stuff. It's almost like they're saying, well, this is what Travis brought out in her. This is how right. bad he is because look at the woman before you.
And how could she do that?
She is so petite, so cute, so tiny, so brave.
Yes.
She, look at her little bangs. Look at her.
Just a wee thing.
Very sad. Look, she's not blonde anymore.
Boo-hoo.
You know what I mean? Like yeah. she went back to how God made her. And she, yep. you know what I mean? So all these things where it's like, I have no doubt that like defense could definitely benefit from all of these things being out yeah. in the open with their phone calls and texts and emails and all of that is like, yeah, look at what he brought out. Look how he made her
mm-hmm.
because she was so impressionable. Look at this young, dainty person.
And also like, if this is who's before you. How bad did it have to get for her to do what she did?
Yeah. Look how tiny.
But we're getting ahead of ourselves a little bit because the thing is, Jodi's been telling everybody about the masked intruders for years.
The ninjas.
For years. The ninjas, if you will. And she did. So
she called them ninjas.
She did. And it's been really interesting seeing like psychologists' take on the ninja story and what they think she was sort of projecting.
Mm.
But in the middle of this trial, like I said, I'm going to do this a little out of order. So I think if I were to start with the prosecution's case, you would not even want to fucking hear Jody's, which is part of why I'm doing this. I do think it's fair to give her a fair chance at getting her story out there. Do I think it's got any merit? No. But I think it's fair to put it out there.
Mm-hmm.
So she essentially changes her entire story. And she totally trashes Travis Alexander's reputation in the making. And despite her telling the story of the ninja attackers for years in anticipation and lead up to the trial, Jody came out and told an entirely different story once again. So this is her third, if you're keeping track.
Mm-hmm.
Probably more like her 10th if we're keeping track of the little detail changes in the ninja story, but I don't think anybody is, so we'll call it the third.
Oh my.
In the middle of this trial, Jody took the stand, which is something that people were not expecting, let alone for the amount of time she did, and let alone for the content that she took the stand with.
Mm.
In many murder trials, the defendant does not take the stand, because then you get to be cross-examined.
Mm-hmm.
Which also happened in this case.
Under oath.
Not that I think that like honesty is really her big thing.
No, she's not losing sleep over that.
No, but just worth saying, she gets up there for 18 fucking days on that stand.
Oh, but that plays right into she loves to yap.
She loves to yap. She loves attention. If we're looking at like court days, that's like a month straight.
That's a lot.
Of her just being on stand. So she gets up there, and instead of the ninja attackers that let her go, the first thing Jody says is, yeah, I'm Jody, and yeah, I killed him.
Mm.
And people are like, the fuck?
Why did we just spend the last 4 months here?
Truly. Yeah. What the damn hell?
This could have been an email.
This could have been an email. So Jody spends 18 days saying that Travis mentally and emotionally abused her for a year plus, because that's really as long as they knew each other. It was not that long.
Mm-hmm.
And that on more than one occasion had laid hands on her. She also gave the courts significant amounts of their sexual encounters over text and phone, including over 70 minutes of phone sex with Travis.
Mm.
And something else that, I mean, we'll play a clip in just a second here, but I think it's important to mention that Jody uses this time to also call Travis a fucking pedophile.
Okay.
Yeah. So not only did he abuse her, mm-hmm. and he sort of brought out this like sexual deviant in her from the godly woman that she was, that she converted to after meeting him. But mm-hmm. okay. But now she's in prison, right? While she's like, or I guess jail, while she's going through this trial and sort of waiting to see if she's going to be convicted and what her sentence is going to be and all of this. So she's incarcerated. And there's this other documentary that's really good called Jody Arias, like Cellmate Secrets, where two of her old cellmates talk about this. And what's the worst thing you can be in prison?
A pedophile.
And what came out only after she was incarcerated about Travis?
Calling him a pedophile.
So now she has this whole extra element of like, I walked in on him masturbating to a picture of a little boy. And I want to be very clear, like very fucking clear. Travis's family has sworn up and down there is no evidence of any child pornography. There was no evidence of photos of children that they didn't know. There were no photos of like family children, I don't even think, in his house. He's a 20-something-year-old man. I think he just turned 30. Like, he's not hanging out and looking at all the like family albums. You know what I mean?
And the police would have also brought that up.
Yes.
And like, that would have been in their investigation, and nothing was found.
Zero evidence. There's no computer files. There's no magazines. No photo clippings. There's fucking nothing. And there's nothing ever anywhere else in his history to say that this was something he was interested in.
And an accusation of pedophilia is one of those rare circumstances where to be accused is damning.
Uh-huh. And he's not alive to refute that or to show that.
Yeah, he can't defend himself against these things.
Right. And so not only is she spreading now that Travis is like abusive and violent and vile, but he's also a pedophile and his family has to sit through all of this at his own fucking court case for his murder. So Jody's going through all of this and desecrating his name by all of these accounts of abuse and pedophilia, and that she's afraid for her life, and that in her telling this, Travis... And that she's afraid for her life. And so in the middle of building this argument, she plays clips like this in court.
Actually, so like the way you know maybe it sounds like you're this 12-year-old girl having her first orgasm. It's so hot.
It sounds like what?
12-year-old girl having her first orgasm.
So that was in fucking court. And I'm almost certain the only reason she said the pedophile bit was because of his comment in this phone sex.
And that could have been something that she was encouraged to say by her defense team.
Truly. And I don't think there was any evidence that he knew he was being recorded on this phone call. And so people sort of take this as like, maybe she did this to blackmail him. Maybe she did this to have something over his head for when he was alive. Like, we don't know.
I mean, I don't put it past her.
I also don't put it past her. And I do think that, like, I'm not going to say it's unproblematic to be turned on by the idea of a 12-year-old orgasming for the first time. But that's not evidence that he was a pedophile or that he did anything or was genuinely interested in that.
He did also know he was on the phone with, like, a 27-year-old woman.
Yes. And... everything else they were doing was so sexually mature.
Right. I mean, I'm not going to defend that by any means, but I also don't think that that was indicative of, like, true desires.
Yeah. And, again, we have over a year of their, like, sexts that she's putting out there. Like, he is not in any other form being like, ah, you are little, you are a baby. Like, I like that about this.
Right.
I think this was an offhand comment about a really bad fake orgasm. Which he probably didn't know was fake. It's not his fault. But, like, that's a fake orgasm. And and she's, like, putting on a whole fucking show of it and then records it and puts it in court to be like, and that's why I had to kill him.
Mm-hmm.
Bitch. So she goes through all of this. And... in her telling of this, she now says that there's no masked intruders. Instead, during the camera photos that she was taking while he was in the shower, she drops the camera.
Mm-hmm.
And he gets pissed. He gets violently pissed. He says, I'm going to fucking kill you.
While he's in the shower.
And also, you know, while the camera's fucking fine. Like,
and also, he looks terrified in the last photos.
Yeah.
So this was before... the camera was dropped.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then obviously he wouldn't have known this in her telling of the story, but the camera was still taking photos after it was dropped. So, like, the camera was working okay. And so she says, but, you know, he threatened to kill me and he'd hurt me before. So I had no reason not to believe it. And so then I had to fight for my life. And Kirk Newmy tries to show this sort of pattern of quote unquote abuse for Jody through... like, a few different things. Some of it was that Travis kind of kept her as, like, his sexy little secret. She didn't line up with this, like, vision of what he wanted to be in his life. And so, naturally, if all of your friends are in the Mormon faith and you have punishments that include being almost, like, excommunicated from all of your support and community by bringing this up and explaining it and sort of like admitting to this that like it must have been really hurtful for her to be the secret. And then he also shows, I mean, truly problematic texts. There were some problematic ones between them. Nobody's perfect, but Travis never got the chance to grow past that. And all of these were used, in my opinion, extremely out of context because I have no idea what was happening around the times they were sent. So I can't imagine anybody in the courtroom did. But texts showed where he called her a three-hole wonder. There were texts about him wanting to essentially do anal with her, which is something that two consenting adults can do. You know?
I mean, I don't think it's in the Bible, but yep.
Well, I guess, okay, yeah. Abstinence is the other big A they teach, huh? So, but, like, they also show texts where there's, like, a little bit of escalation and fights with Jody, and Travis calls Jody a sociopath. And then they use anecdotes where Jody says she was beaten and that Travis was threatening to kill her. And, like, she talks about once where he, like, throws her on the ground, and there's no evidence to back up any of these anecdotes. There are the text fights where he's like, I can't believe you'd do this. You're a sociopath. And there are the sexy texts where he's like, yeah, I'm into like a little bit of exhibitionism, I guess, with her and like anal. And she's a three-hole wonder. But defense is putting this out. This is not prosecution being like, look at this. Defense is putting this out. And so they use this as justification for saying Jody was truly in fear of her life when Travis threatened to kill her, and that that is somehow justification for her shooting him, stabbing him 27 times, primarily in his back, and slitting his throat.
Which is not defense.
No, if someone's back is turned to you, are they a threat to you in that moment? No.
If this rendition of quote unquote the truth really did happen, he would have had wounds on him, like on his arms for trying to attack her.
Mm-hmm.
Like there would be wounds on him that would confirm the story, and there aren't.
No, in fact, the only other wounds he has are defensive wounds from trying to stop her from stabbing him.
Yep.
Where I think like some of the webbing between two of his fingers got cut really deep.
Oh.
And there were like a few marks on the back of his arms from like trying to hold them up, you know, to keep her from getting to him. But like, she slit his throat so deep, it's kind of a miracle he wasn't decapitated.
No, that's true.
He was shot in the head and stabbed 27 times. That's a lot.
And the roommates heard nothing?
And they said, man, Call of Duty's getting really realistic these days.
Oh my.
The fuck?
Wow. Anyway, that's just an aside. So this is the story she's giving.
So this is what she gives. This is what she makes Travis's family sit through a month of her testifying to. This is what she is now claiming, despite telling the ninja story for 2 years. So she's now a new woman with a new story, and Travis's poor fucking family. I just can't stop thinking about them. Like, being his siblings sitting in that room.
And just to hear his memory be not only desecrated by, like, airing some of the things that he would have never wanted aired.
Yeah.
But then just also these blatant lies. And these lies are vile. Like, this isn't, oh, like, he didn't stop at stop signs. This is, like, he didn't tip. Like, this is, like... really vile, awful stuff that, I mean, our sins are evil, are predatory, are violent.
And I think that definitely this new image of her walking in looking as young as possible, as innocent as possible,
as dainty as possible.
Dainty. She cries at all the right times, or, you know, quote unquote cries. She looks into her head and sniffles, like, you know. And also then by bringing this up of like, he's a pedophile, and look at this phone call where he calls me a 12-year-old. But like also, in that entire 70-minute fucking phone sex thing, she's into all of it.
Mm-hmm.
I want to make that very clear. She's into all of it. At one point, she's like, that's gross. I like it. Or something like that. Oh. And it's like, Okay, so you like it.
It's just he's being victimized twice. There's the there's that initial attack, and then there's the slandering that goes down that, you know, when he was dating her and they were having these intimate moments, that was between the two of them.
Yeah.
With no intention or expectation that this would ever go beyond the two of them and their fun. And was he struggling with, like, his religion and what he wanted to do with that and, like, where he saw his life and, like, hey, maybe are the decisions I'm making now in line with where I want to be and the life that I want for myself? It seemed like he decided no and ended that with her because he was no longer happy.
Right.
And that is the worst thing he did. He strung her along? Absolutely.
Yeah.
Find me a man who hasn't.
And also, like, sure, there were some elements of, like, emotional... Abuse feels like a strong word, but like some toxic moments, I think people are entitled to grow. It doesn't make that right, but that also doesn't make it a justification for brutally fucking murdering someone.
But he died not knowing that his death would become like national news.
Mm-hmm.
And not national news because of the way that he was victimized, but national news because of all of the skeletons that were brought out and some that were made up essentially like at his expense.
Oh yeah.
And that's just, that's heartbreaking for the family. There's just so many victims, and I like, I'm thinking of them as we're going over this whole thing because I can imagine where they would be sitting and like they would get scolded if they made a sound.
Mm-hmm.
And you probably just want to scream and be like, that's not true.
Yeah.
Like, she's lying. You can't lie.
Well, and the other piece of it is, this isn't a normal court case. This isn't like Arius versus Alexander. Like, he has no ability to fight back. The whole point in this is prosecution is saying, you murdered him.
Mm-hmm.
And she's saying, yep, and he was a shitty person. And they can't say, no, he wasn't. They just have to say, you murdered him. So there is like nothing on air, nothing on record of people saying, no, that's not true. So I try to make very clear, like, the places his family are very adamant of, like, that is not like him. That is not true.
Right. And I'm sure the state called some of his friends to the stand to talk about how he was as a friend.
Oh, yeah.
You know, how he treated you, how he was at work, how he was at church, all of these things. And like, oh, did you know that he was dating Jody? What was that like?
Right.
Did you ever have any concerns? Can you talk to me about those concerns? She did what outside the door?
Yeah.
She... She crawled through his doggy door. Say more on that. You know, those kinds of things. But like, prosecution has to coax that out of people.
Right. So it's just, I don't know. I think it's heartbreaking. And this is hard enough to listen to on its own. But I think the prosecution case is going to make you even angrier about all of that.
Oh, good.
Because Prosecutor Juan Martinez showed a lot of fucking evidence that shut down any version of Jody's story as the truth. Obviously, to get a first-degree murder charge, the prosecution has to show that there was this intent with a plan and thought ahead of time to take Travis's life.
Mm-hmm.
And while Jody is going for second-degree murder, the sort of like passion in the heat of the moment, I'm afraid of my life, it's self-defense, Juan Martinez shows every single account of ways that this is not fucking true. And it's beautiful. He does a phenomenal job with this, to be honest.
Good.
So he shows extreme amounts of planning and preparation on Jody's parts. First of all, they were able to show that Jody borrowed two gas like cans from a friend. I think maybe an ex.
Hmm.
It might have been one of the... It might have been the gas station.
Please say gas station vampire. Yes.
Or his magician roommate. I'm not entirely sure.
No, I have gas station vampire on my bingo card. It has to be.
I just love it. I love that that's part of her history. But like, it was definitely an ex she borrowed two of these cans from. And then she goes and buys a third one. She fills up in California. And then she dyes her hair brown so that neighbors can't call her the blonde girl that Travis was seeing.
Mm-hmm.
She rents a rental car 100 miles away from home. So she drives like an hour and a half or 2 hours, then rents a car.
So odd.
And then goes to see Travis. She obviously has no trace of her buying gas in Arizona. She shuts her phone off the entire time she's in Arizona, so there's no trace of her there. She goes to Travis's house. She had this break-in stage to get the 25 caliber handgun from her grandfather. Like,
there the premeditation. Is
premeditation on premeditation on premeditation on premeditation. And then there's cover up.
Mm.
So there's no like, ah, these ninjas scared me and I never said anything again. In fact, her telling that story for 2 years was just as damning as her telling the actual story of what she claims happened that definitely didn't happen.
Mm-hmm.
And like all of these things together make her cover up even that much more fucking notable.
Mm-hmm.
So she did some weird things to cover up this murder and pretend she had nothing to do with it. Not only, of course, did she turn off her phone the entire time she was in Arizona, but then afterwards, she calls Travis and leaves this fake-ass voicemail asking for him to, like, give input on what he wants to do on a trip with her and a friend that's coming up that she invites him to. She, I think, even sends him, like, an email or something. She's, like, asking her friends, like, have you heard from him? I haven't heard from him in a while. And, like, all of these things on top of the stories that she's told, like even let's take out the most recent one where she's like, I was afraid for my life. Just the ninja one. If mm-hmm. you're like, hey, I was there for this brutal attack where he was murdered and I narrowly escaped with my life. Then I called his phone to be like, hey, Trav, what do you want to do when we go to Cancun? They weren't going to Cancun, but you know what I mean? Like, what do you want to do on this trip?
Right.
And then emails him and then is like talking to friends of like, oh my God, have you heard from him? I'm so worried.
Unreal.
The other thing she did was obviously she had this like new guy she was talking to as an alibi. So like she was there. Like, what are you talking about?
Imagine being him and it's just like, oh, I'm only here for part of your cover up.
Yeah.
Like that is the only reason you want to spend time with me.
Yeah. That's gotta feel shitty. And then she has this prepaid legal conference in Salt Lake City, which is why she was going there to begin with.
Mm.
And now something that last podcast on the left brought up that was like really interesting to me was that they thought that was probably part of her cover up because they think she probably assumed he'd be found earlier than he was. Now, remember, he was killed on the 4th, but he wasn't found until the 9th.
Yeah.
So she was at this conference with a bunch of people who knew him, who knew that they had been together, who knew this history. And like she even talked to somebody there that was like, oh, yeah, Travis and I are still really good friends. Like we broke up, but like we just our paths are never going to like part all the way kind of thing. And so they sort of assumed that they were like they thought she assumed he'd be found while she was there and she could very publicly grieve. And have people latch on to that of like, oh, shoot, but she was grieving the whole time. And then that kind of like absolutely failed because people didn't find him for another 5 days.
Ugh.
You know? And so just fascinating. But I think it's a really good point and probably part of her plan that did not go as it was supposed to.
Yes.
For her to be surrounded by all of their mutual friends who knew about them.
Mm-hmm.
And who knew him because he was a big name in prepaid legal.
Right.
Also interesting and worth noting, Jody got 150 questions from the jury during this trial. That's, God, I don't know, not quite 15 apiece, but just about 15 questions from each juror. And there were multiple jurors that were dismissed during this trial.
There's a thing in some southern states where the jury can write questions.
Oh, yeah, that's what happened.
Right, that's not... I mean, up here in New England, I've never heard of a court doing that. But in these kinds of trials, in some states, they do allow the jurors to like jot them down. And I believe they go to the judge and the judge reads them.
Yeah.
And then that's something that has to be addressed. Or, I mean, I guess you can choose not to, but...
150 questions.
That's a lot of people being like, okay, yeah, but what about this,
though? But
what
the fuck, though? Yeah.
And over here, and what about that one, though?
Also, kind of funny to me. I mean, is it a little rude? Probably. But she was so, she cried so much when Prosecutor Martinez was like, uh-huh, and then you stabbed him 27 times in the back. Uh-huh, and then you shot him in the head. Uh-huh, and then you slit his throat. So all of that was in self-defense because he was mad you dropped his camera.
Mm-hmm.
And she was just like a fucking mess. I'm like, good. Like,
because you killed him for no reason because you were mad he broke up with you, you dummy.
And also, like, I'm sorry. I know that they had to find some sort of defense story. Like, that's part of the job. That's part of her take. Like, she's mm-hmm. trying to get off of this. I get it. But that amount of overkill for quote unquote self-defense because he dropped a camera. Come up with a better story than that.
Yeah, no.
Of like, I stabbed him and he, I think they assumed it was a shot first and then stabs and then the slit. But like, she conveniently got amnesia for like all of that time. She doesn't remember anything until the knife fell on the floor and it made a clanking sound.
Sure.
Sure. Sure, Jan. Yeah. So it was kind of fun to see her break down when he was like, yeah, sure. And it was funny. Oh, he was such a dick about it, but it was funny. He was like, were you crying when you stabbed him? Were you crying when you shot him? Oh. Ugh. Sorry. She's very frustrating to me. But this trial took so long that it wasn't over until May of 2013.
Yeah.
The jury left to deliberate and found her guilty on first degree murder. Shocking nobody but Jodi Arias herself. But not so shocked, she didn't immediately hold an interview or like press conference to talk to the people en masse about how surprised she was. She gets convicted, goes back and is like, all right, call the press.
It's time for an interview.
Yep. And she's like, I'm shocked. I'm shocked.
She's clutching her pearls.
Yep. And then she does something weird where she's like, yeah, I just want the death penalty. Like, I beg to be put to death. And then immediately switches it up and is like, but I just hope that, you know, they spare my family the pain of giving me the death penalty. I've hurt them enough. They don't deserve that.
Oh, geez.
Are you? I'm so sorry. Oh, yes. Her family is the victim in this. They did not do anything. Her mom sounds wonderful, like from all the things I've read. Her mom drove with her grandmother to go and visit her after she was, I don't know if it was after she was officially convicted or if it was after she was charged and waiting trial, but like she did a lot for her and still today is like, I love my child unconditionally.
Oh yeah. There's a lot of photos of them in prison with her.
Yeah. And so like, I get it. They are victims in this, but it's just another fucking example of her existing in her own bubble, ignoring every other person she's heard outside of this. Confusing in terms of like, I want to die, also spare my family that, though.
It's because it's her attempt at looking selfless. Like, listen, I don't care.
Yeah.
What happens to me, but don't do that to them.
And it's, she loves the attention, just any version of attention. And I think obviously she wants positive attention. So she's going to do whatever she can to spin it in a positive way.
Mm-hmm.
But like, all of that being said, court was still not over.
Because it's time for sentencing?
Because it's time for sentencing. And this sentencing was so fucked. But I kind of like where we ended up with it. So at the time, because Arizona had the death penalty on the table and she hit all of the marks for that, the jury had to deliberate on whether or not Jodi would get the death penalty. The first time this is deliberated, the jury is hung and they come back 8-4 for the death penalty. So there are four people holding out. And I think some of the things they know is like, okay, but I just don't see like going over and having this intimate time with someone all afternoon, like sleeping together and like sleeping together and showering and taking photos and then brutally murdering him like this without something precipitating it. But there's also this notion of people saying like, she's so small. She's so small. And to carry a man that large back from where he was shot and stabbed into the shower to sort of rinse him off. How is she doing that on her own? How is she doing that? Period.
Very, very valid.
Very valid. And there's all of these concerns. So it's 8-4. And this, of course, makes it a hung jury, which is a mistrial. So they have to do it again.
For the sentencing.
For the sentencing. Now, the second time they have a sentencing trial, the jury is hung again at 11-1.
Wow.
Pro death penalty. And there was one fucking holdout. And that's fine. I actually really admire when people hold out like that, if they are like convicted in that belief that like, no, she should not be killed for this. To be that one person would probably be very uncomfortable for the few hours you're in that room.
Mm-hmm.
But because this is hung again, Arizona had a law that meant death penalty then got taken off the table. So if there were two attempts to do this and both of them came back unsuccessful, it would automatically be sent to life without parole.
Okay.
So she is now incarcerated for the rest of her life without the chance of parole, which I'll take. I think that's good.
I'll take it.
And something I wanted to bring up here was how Jody responded to this. Jody literally talked to the courtroom about all of the things she was going to do in prison.
Oh.
She said, I'm going to start a recycling program. And I think she said she's going to start a book club.
So she's not upset about it. She's like, oh, this is home now. I'll just make it work.
She's like, listen, I am so thankful for this opportunity. I would love to be your student council president. I'm going to create a recycling program and a book club. So good. This prison has never seen before. I'm going to compost. I'm going to get us into thrillers. Just kidding. romance. And then,
oh my.
She's like going through all of this shit. And then the thing that really grinds my gears.
Really, Danny's my DeVito. Oh,
Danny's my DeVito. No, honestly, no, I'm not even going to bring him into this. He's too good for this. Oh, I hate this. She then uses this time to once again call herself a victim of abuse and domestic violence and says that, listen, I have all of these plans to better myself and the people around me and the world around me. So, like, good for you for not putting me to death. But the other thing I'm going to do is I'm selling these t-shirts and all of the proceeds will go to help victims of domestic violence. And she holds up the shittiest fucking white V-neck Michaels t-shirt that she got iron-on letters for that are like ugly purple sparkle that just say survivor.
I mean, what do you think? She's got a nice printing press in prison? Come on.
I mean, it's not about that. She's like, I'm selling these. Hey, thanks for not putting me to death. I'm going to recycle, read books, and get your money for a false narrative that I was abused.
Yeah, leave it to Jody.
Money, please.
It's true.
Like, what the fuck?
Hey, the proceeds are going to charity.
Are they?
Well, yeah.
Is she the charity? Is she the victim of domestic violence that's helping?
It's true. She's like, I want to buy the different kind of ramen.
I know. She's like, come on. I've been having beef this whole time. I want chicken.
Could be.
The fuck?
Oh, my.
Now, I will take comfort in knowing that Jody is behind bars for the rest of her life. But I will say, if you're interested in knowing more about Jody, I think that Jody Arias' Cellmate Secrets documentary will be a phenomenal one to spend some time on. It's like an hour max. When I found it, it was available to stream on Apple TV and Amazon Prime. But I think it's always worth noting that, like, cellmates are obviously also incarcerated for something and often have something to gain.
Yes.
That being said, I tend to trust the two that did this documentary, mostly because they sort of talk about their time and all of it. And, like, not all of it is super flattering light on themselves, but they talk about all of it. And I think that's fair. Their names are Donovan and Tracy, and they became close with Jody immediately after she was being held pre-trial. She, I believe, became cellmates with Tracy, and then Donovan's cell was nearby, and Tracy and Donovan were a couple at this time, and it's fucking interesting.
Two women, right?
Yes. Okay. Super interesting. They were like, people accused us of having threesomes. And Tracy at one point was like, we never had a threesome. Though at one point, Donovan and Tracy were like getting it on and Jody just fucking refused to leave.
Oh.
She was like, I'm going to be down here on the bottom bunk. You guys have fun.
Oh, no.
Yeah. And then at one point, I think Donovan's cell was like nearby because Tracy started putting on like a little strip show for Donovan at one point, and then Jody just fucking joined in.
Oh. Jody.
She was like, wait, me too.
Oh my.
Look at my bloomers. And my Fruit of the Loom.
Yeah, yum.
And the other thing that's interesting here was like they forged a very close friendship, the three of them. I mean, you're together all the fucking time. So, like, if you're finding your people, you're finding your people. But I'm curious if they sort of became her new version of that favorite person phenomenon.
Mm-hmm.
She wrote very nice, very kind, flattering, very long letters to them both. They were very supportive.
Yeah.
And she loved to sing.
Yes.
She loved to sing. She did participate in Inmate Idol.
Which was their American Idol.
Which was their American Idol singing contest that she won for singing "O Holy Night."
You're kidding.
I'm not. It was a reprise, baby.
Are you kidding me?
Oh, holy night.
That is so insulting, too. Uh-huh. Like, to sing the same... All right.
Like, girl, get a fucking discography.
You know other songs, bitch.
So that was curious. And because of her love to sing, Donovan and Tracy started calling her Songbird. At one point, she got really into tattooing, so she gave both Tracy and Donovan stick and pokes.
Ouch.
And, like, not for nothing. I get they were all incarcerated. I don't blame Tracy or Donovan for this, but, like, man, prison tattoos are not great. They're, like, made of graphite and Bic ink.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Like,
yep.
And smashed up real tight there.
Pens and...
Yeah. And yep. It's not a real tattoo gun.
Mm-mm.
It's not a real tattoo needle.
Mm-mm.
So it's just a really dull pain every time you stick and poke the person with ink, which she did to both of them multiple times.
Can you imagine having a tattoo done by Jody Arias?
Yeah. I hate the idea of it.
J plus T forever.
Literally.
She would.
She would. Forever. And like a heart on a tree trunk.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the ones, I think she gave it to Tracy, who literally said Songbird. Because that's what they would call her.
So you just make it about you.
Yeah. She said, I'm going to do this stick and poke. It's going to be about me. It's going to have my name on it.
Mm-hmm.
On your body. Okay? Okay?
Thanks.
Thank you. Fucking ridiculous. Now, they also talk a lot about their interactions with her. And these seem to further solidify my take on that borderline personality disorder being like the closest fit we have. Again. Petitioning for unspecified cluster B personality disorder in DSM-6. Please. Please. American Psychology Association, I'm begging you. DSM-6. Okay. Now, I think some of this was not only like those letters that she wrote and just sort of how immediately attached she became to these two, but also like something I found particularly interesting after her history with Travis was that Tracy was Wiccan, and Tracy would practice some of these like ceremonies and rituals. And for her, it's like a very personal spiritual connection with the earth and sort of elements that way. And Jody was like, yeah, done. Immediately, I'm converting to Wiccan.
Wow.
And like, that feels, I mean, twice isn't a pattern yet, but. It's a mighty fine coincidence.
It's because she doesn't take anything that seriously that she's like, yeah, sure.
Yeah, this is important to you. Yeah, no.
And I want to be important to you, so I will take on this thing that makes you feel closer to me.
Yeah, and in that case, maybe she does have an unstable sense of self, and that would count for the diagnostic criteria there.
Could be.
Further, something that's interesting here is Donovan notes having a really good relationship with Jody for a long time. Both Donovan and Tracy, if I remember, were in for relatively minor offenses. Obviously enough that they were found guilty and were held. You know, they were charged and incarcerated for some time.
Mm-hmm.
But they were both in for a significantly less amount of time than Jody, obviously. Mm. But Donovan, if I remember right, was like technically an accomplice in like an arson.
Ooh.
I think she was like the getaway driver for like an abusive ex-husband.
Okay.
If I remember right. Obviously, if you watch it, like, you'll know. But
mm-hmm.
obviously, not a good thing.
Mm-mm.
Not a good place to be. But not one that gave her all of that much time because she didn't have an active role in it. She was an accomplice for, like, leaving. And so she gets out and is able to still talk with Jody. You know, they write letters back and forth. They like call and all of this. And after Donovan's out, Jody's content in these letters becomes very much like, you are my personal secretary. You're going to reach out to all these people on Facebook. You're going to harass these people. You're going to look up into this. You're going to get this version of my story out there.
Hmm.
And Donovan's like, fine, but annoyed. Like, I will do this for my friend, but like, I'm like, okay, come on. Like,
yeah,
are we done yet? And at one point, I don't remember if she missed a call or if she explicitly refused. She was like, no, I have other things going on in my life. I don't have time to do your laundry list of Facebook messages today. And Jody fucking lost it. I think it was on a call, but she said like some of the most horrendous things to Donovan, like absolutely read her for filth for not doing this list of tasks and chores that she couldn't accomplish being incarcerated. And Donovan was like, that's when my opinion started to change. And then I started to see all of the things that other people were saying about her and like the way she treated them and all of the other evidence that was coming out. And I started to feel bad about this. And Tracy's opinion started to change around the same time because Donovan and Tracy actually got married after they were both released.
Aww.
And they're both out and they are both still happily married, or at least they were at the release of this documentary. I think it was in like 2018 or 2020.
Well, congrats.
I know. Happy they're happy. Happy they're happy and out and seemingly pro-social at this point in time. Mm-hmm. Like,
yep.
Those are all good things. But like, fascinating that they're both like, yeah, this is fucked up now. Like,
yes.
You get drawn in and then you're like, oh, this is fucked up. The other thing that was really interesting to me in that cellmate secrets case was that Donovan had a talk with Jody at one point and Jody admitted to there being an accomplice, which she had never said to anybody else before.
Which it's hard to take, you know, this is now the fourth story.
Right.
Or 400th at this point with right. the minor tweaks. But that would give some credit to how she was able to move him.
Right. And also just like, I don't know, that's a long drive. That's a lot going on. And if I remember right, I don't think it was an ex, but it was like another man that she knew in some capacity, according to Donovan, like this story. And Donovan says that she was able to talk to this man and he kind of confirmed it. And so she tried to go and tell someone to be like, listen, I'm helping. And Jody got pissed about that too. Jody was like, no, like that is not the story.
But it's also odd to me that Jody would allow herself to go down for that if somebody else had a role, because she seems to be willing to throw most people that she cared about under the bus if it benefited her.
Yeah, I do and I don't. I think I agree. It seems like she likes to take the benefit of everything she can, but I think she knew there was enough evidence that she was going to get something regardless. And if she doesn't tell people, there's still this looming question of how. And that gets her all of this attention. And I think she wants the attention.
Mm.
Also, it might win her some favors with the person she didn't throw under the bus. And maybe they're getting her ramen on the commissary.
Could be.
Could be. Hey, you're not in here for life. So fork it over, buddy. I don't know. But fascinating.
Yes.
And I think definitely, I know people often have things to gain when it comes to publicity and sharing stuff like this. I tend to believe it, especially with Jody's reaction and sort of the recorded response we have to this. Like, I don't know. Mm. And she is tiny. She's fucking tiny.
Yes.
And I would not doubt that she wasn't like going to the gym and lifting a bunch of weights so that she could drag a man's body if she needed to. Mm-hmm. I don't think that was really in her plan. So.
Yeah.
So just curious. And I would definitely recommend it if you want to see more about how Jody operates with her other interpersonal relationships. But all in all, Jody Arias is an enigma of a woman or monster, whichever you prefer. She murdered a man in incredible gore and then exploited every private moment, fight, intimate moment, and even showed phone sex he didn't know he was being recorded to try to call him a pedophile. And she is living in a small cell for the rest of her days, which I'll take that, I guess. So fascinating.
absolutely wild.
But I did just want to take a few moments here to remember the loss that we experienced, because Jody is fascinating and infuriating and an enigma of a woman, no doubt. But Travis Alexander is ultimately who we lost. And Travis was an introspective, spiritual man who just wanted to grow. He had a tumultuous, hot and heavy relationship that he never got the chance to show his growth out of, but wanted nonetheless. I mean, you can read his blog where he's like, I want to find a good woman. I want to find someone who will bring out the best in me that I can bring out the best in and that I can relate to on these things. And he never got the chance to show that. He was loving and fun, and he always tried to make people feel wanted and comfortable. Travis was kind and successful, and he wanted to be a good person. He loved his friends, he loved his family, and he even loved Jody in his own way, where he couldn't even turn her away when he knew he wanted something that was better for him. And I think that with all of that being said, he did everything he could to live and learn and grow until the opportunity was brutally taken from him. And then the same person who did that to him tried to desecrate his character in absolutely every way she fucking could.
And in a lot of ways, she did.
Oh, she did. I feel so much for Travis's family. I feel for Jody's family, but I feel for Travis's family so deeply.
I feel like one of the things that we do, I think unintentionally, is really deify the dead and really, you know, someone can be an asshole in life, but when they're dead, they're a saint,
right,
kind of thing. And I think that that's not true either, because then you, of course, make this sort of pedestal that they are inevitably going to fall from because they were human.
Right.
And they made mistakes. And I think that this case sort of takes the opposite look, where it was like so much of what was said about him was so bad.
Yeah.
And it was like, you're forgetting to consider that he was human and that he did make mistakes. And so did she. And those aren't things that they should have been condemned for. And yeah, do I think he strung her along? Absolutely. She was hot. Mm-hmm. She was willing. She was like this little free spirit. And while she was fun then, she wasn't going to be fun later.
Mm-hmm.
And he didn't want to settle down with her.
Right.
He could have just not liked the fact that she was blonde and broken up with her. You can break up with who you want to for whatever reason you want.
Yeah. That's well within your right. And that doesn't mean that you should be murdered for it.
No. And it doesn't mean that, you know, you didn't make mistakes along the way, but there are some things you're just not willing to put up with or you want a change from. And so, yeah, I don't think he was this ideal boyfriend to her. And I think that, like, they did things and they snuck around. And part of it was probably the excitement,
right,
of doing things
that you're not supposed to.
Yeah, it was wrong and dirty in a way, but it was fun and it was exciting. And yeah, then I think the polish wears off and you kind of learn more, and it just wasn't worth it. And so he didn't want to be with her anymore. And it was like she just could not handle that.
Right.
But I think in this case, so much was focused on the, you know, mistakes he made, or exacerbating or truly lying about other things that he is said to have done that I don't believe are true.
Mm-hmm.
And we hold victims like victims should be this perfect being. And a lot of times we say that they are.
And that's not fair or true.
No, it's not fair. It's not true. It's not accurate, and it's not bettering anybody.
No.
And for forcing that belief,
it's kind of damaging in the way that, like, the higher the pedestal, the greater the fall.
Mm-hmm.
But for him, it was like, let's just keep fucking kicking this down further. And so to then compare what was said about him, what was offered as his character flaws or the reasons that she felt warranted in so brutally taking his life, then it feels almost the opposite. It's like the greater the rise of, like, he was a good person. He was a normal person with flaws and mistakes, absolutely, with, like, some interpersonal relationship challenges. Who among us? He did not have a really great childhood and role model, it seemed like, to look for that, other than maybe his grandmother. And, like, he was doing everything he could to emulate that, to be better, to do better. And it's okay that he made a mistake and that wasn't great. But it's like that compared to what was said about him versus, like, the mistakes and the flaws that we actually see. Those few bad texts, they were bad. I'll give it that. the sort of stringing her along, for sure, not great. But like everything else we see, the accounts from his friends, his family, his own blog, where he's like, this is what I want. This is my hopes, my dreams, my goals. It's so wildly better than the image of him that she paints, that it's like, okay, this is a full person. This is a person, like, good and bad all together, and there's good there. And that's what we lost, and we lost in such a violent way. It was so bad. You can see those photos. I do not recommend it.
No, and I think Jody's where she should be.
Yeah.
I think that there are probably some good qualities in Jody.
Sure.
I think that she needed, like, some treatment earlier in life and maybe more, like, accountability and firmness. Like, I don't think I'd let my kid move out of the house as a youngin.
Yeah.
But, I mean, there's no way you can predict that. Yeah. Then, right? You don't have this crystal ball that tells you what this is going to become.
Well, and it's one of those that, like, especially with borderline, like, that is something we've learned a lot in recent years about. That has not been one that's been, like, widely researched for a long period of time.
Mm-hmm.
I actually was literally just at a bookstore and I found a book on it called I Hate You, Don't Leave Me. And I was like, that's right.
Yeah, that pretty much wraps up borderline.
Yeah. And that's awful. Like, I would never wish that on someone. That's a tumultuous and difficult way to live.
Mm-hmm.
But you can manage it if you go for help and you actively want to manage it.
Yeah.
And I know that her parents tried their best. They did what they could. They found out she was growing weed and they were like, we're looking through your room. Like, we're doing the searches. We're doing what we can. They mm-hmm. just didn't know. And it, because they didn't know, they weren't able to make the choices to protect that future, you know? Ugh. It's hard. Well, there's a lot of loss here.
What a case.
Truly what a case.
I want to hear from our listeners. What did you learn from this? I'm sure you knew some of the basics, right? A lot of us do. What did you learn? What was surprising? Do you think there's an accomplice?
And if you think there was one, do you think you know who it was?
Ooh. So let us know. We want to know. We also want to encourage you to rate, review, download, tell a friend.
Tell a friend, tell a stranger. If you wanted to, like, go down below. If you're on Spotify, I know the majority of you are. There's, like, a little Q&A. What did you think? You can let us know there. You could also, I don't know, give us a 5-star review on Spotify and on Apple if you so pleased. We love it.
We're biased, but we
live for them.
Would appreciate it.
We love hearing your thoughts, your comments, all of that, case recommendations. And you know what else we really love?
Mm.
We love your pod pets. You should send us all the pod pet pictures.
We so love the pod pets. You can see all of those links below in our link tree.
Hell yeah. And again, all of the sources that we use. So if you also feel like doing a deep dive research into this, you have everything I did. And you can sit there with me and go, holy fuck.
Mm-hmm.
But I did just give you, like, I don't know, 5 hours on this. So maybe you're done for a while. And that's also totally fine. But if you wanted to do any of that, all of that, we heavily encourage it. You have access to everything. And hopefully that will help you pass the time in the next week until we get another case from Allie.
Yay.
Yay. But if I do look at my clock, that was
about time for true crime. Bye.